to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 89. I'm your host, Wolfgang Vachon. Today, we're posting part two of my conversation with Dr. Tom Garfat. If you missed part one, you can find it at www.cycpodcast.org or Facebook/CYC Podcast. Go to the post from November 30th, 2016. From there, you can also find a short biography of Dr. Tom Garfat, as well as links to resources by and about him. I hope you enjoy our conversation. So I'd like to talk a bit about, let's start with CYCNet. You've mentioned, we use the term relational practices, and you were instrumental in a journal called, what is now called, Relational Practices in Child and Youth Care.
And thank you for pointing that out to me, because let me tell you how this came about, just for fun, the relational part of relational child and youth care practice. Jerry Fuster, Mark Kruger, and I were sitting on Jerry's balcony on Vancouver Island one day, and we were deciding that we had to change the form and format and, you know, the whole image of the journal. So we decided we had to come up with a new name because it had been called the Journal of Child and Youth Care. So we're sitting around on the balcony, and we're trying to come up with a name. And so eventually we come up with this term, relational child and youth care practice. Well, the reality is we were focused more on the practice part than the relational part. You know, we were saying, okay, this is a journal about doing, you know, doing things with kids and thinking about how we do and everything. And the word relational just got slipped in there somehow. I said, well, we're relationship-based, and we talk about that, and that's too big for a title. So, oh, hey, relational works. So we called this journal Relational Child and Youth Care Practice. Years later, I'm saying talking to Fuster, and I say, so, you know, where the hell did you come up with the idea of using the term relational? He said, don't blame me. It was your idea. You And then we both agree it must have been Kruger.
And sadly, he can't defend himself anymore.
Yes, yes. The reason I tell a story is because it's what happens when you work in a relational way, is that you end up with something that you all like, if you're fortunate, but nobody owns it. Mm-hmm. It's like a we thing, mm-hmm. which, you know, kind of reflects the ideal outcome of working with kids and families, doesn't it? That they would think that it was nice that you were along for the ride, but, you know, they're the ones who did it.
Absolutely.
You know, that's like the ideal outcome.
That really is the ideal outcome. And if both of you can think that you're the one who did it, and you can think, oh, geez, they didn't even really, you know, I didn't even need to be there. They were just, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, because, and the reason I say that is because if families end up really believing, and it's true, but actually believing that they're the ones who work this through, then what hope they have for the future? Mm-hmm. As opposed to saying, oh, God, we're in trouble again. We'll have to get another one of those helper people.
Yeah.
You know, rather saying, okay, we've been through worse than this. We can get through this.
Absolutely.
So I think it's kind of perfect. Yeah. Anyways, that's an aside.
It's a great aside. So I want to go back to writing. Relational child and youth care practice. You mentioned CYC Online a little bit earlier. You mentioned CYCNet. You were one of the co-founders of CYCNet. And for those of you who don't know CYCNet, cyc-net.org, it's crucial that you check it out and visit. Can you tell me what were the origin, what were the intentions of CYCNet?
Yeah. When we had the first International Child and Youth Care Conference in Vancouver, we invited people from a number of different countries to come and talk. So, you know, China, Israel, whatever. And so one of the people we invited was this guy named Brian Gannon, who was the director of the National Association of Child Care Workers in South Africa. So we figured, you know, it was a hot time to talk about South Africa because this was before the fall of apartheid and all that. So we figured this was really cool. So I go to the airport to wait for Brian Gannon to get off the plane from South Africa. My first reaction when I saw him was, oh my God, he's white. You know, because so many of my friends would say, like, oh, you know, you shouldn't have anything to do with South Africa because of the white people and their dominance. Anyways, for whatever reason, Brian and I just clicked. We were both, you know, of the same era. He's like 5 years older than me. We both had similar histories. We both thought similarly about child and youth care. And so we just clicked and we had this relationship. So we stayed in touch. And the next year I got to go to South Africa and our relationship evolved a bit more. Well, what happened was, you know, this was like really pre-internet days. So Brian and I would send each other letters. And in these letters, we would include audio tapes where I would talk to him about some of the things I was thinking about child and youth care. And I'd put it in the mail. You know, a few weeks later, it would show up at his place. He would listen to the tape, you know, and then he would respond on the tape. And then he'd mail it back to me because we couldn't afford the phone calls. It was just like outrageous. So we were mailing these audio tapes back and forth. And he was still with the NACCW, then the South African Child Care Association. And he had started a small intranet for the association for them to share thoughts and talks and whatever. And at one point when he and I were talking, we ended up thinking it might be nice if we could try to do something like that with some of our colleagues from around the world, because now we were like early internet days, you know? And so we started out with a small discussion group of about 12 people. Yeah, 12 people from around the world. And, you know, we would just be just like what the discussion group is like on CYCNet now, although more simple. And so we would be sharing thoughts and ideas. And then somebody would say, hey, listen, can I invite my friend to join this group? And somebody else would say, that's a good idea. Why don't we invite a few friends? And so the next thing you knew, a few of us invited a few other people. Well, within a matter of the first year, we had like 200 people in this discussion group. And from there, it was an easy leap. Brian did all the IT stuff to say, what if we have like a place where people can go and just like read about child and youth care, connect with other people, disseminate information, whatever. So if you ever go back to CYCNet, go to the very, very first issue back in 1999. And you can read the simplicity. You know, now Martin's updated the format so it looks more modern, but it was a very simple site. And so what happened was we started having these discussions, and then we put up this thing called the CYC Online. The very first ones were, like I say, simple pieces, simple articles. And gradually people were drawn to it. And I think people were drawn to it because it was the only place we could go that would connect us with each other outside of our own little worlds. And so I think what happened was CYCNet, as well as being relevant in terms of content and all that kind of stuff, unexpectedly created a place of belonging for people where they could feel like, oh, this is kind of like about me. This is about us. This is our place. And I think that's part of the reason why it grew. And now I know I'm off on a tangent. You asked me how did it start.
The tangent is a wonderful tangent. Continue.
So now, of course, you know, we're at the point where the discussion group has got like 4,000 members. And as you know, not everybody participates all the time, but people jump in at different times. And I remember one time I mentioned Henry Meyer earlier, who was my mentor for like 25 years. And I remember one time this guy wrote in, young fella, second year of practice or something like that. And he writes this question about a young person, you know, and what should I do kind of thing. And so this answer comes back. And it says, well, you know, what about just sort of like connecting with him or something like that? And then this young child and youth care worker responds and says, you don't know what you're talking about, Henry. You've obviously never seen a kid, you know. And it turns out that was Henry Meyer who had answered him. But we tended not to use last names at all in the beginning. It's changed now for some reason, but anyways, we tended not to use last names. So whether it was Lorraine Fox or Henry Meyer or Karen Vandervan, they would just sign with their first names. Well, what it did was it created a place it created more equality. You know, because the hierarchy wasn't so obvious, if I can use that term, you know, or the age difference wasn't so obvious or whatever. And I still see that today. You know, I see students writing in, and there's been some discussion going on lately about whether or not you should read a kid's file. Mm-hmm. And I'm just amazed by who's in this discussion. Mm-hmm. There's like first-year students, and there's like Karen Vandervan jumped mm-hmm. in the other day, you know, so, and Lorraine Fox. And so here's this place where a student can go and just jump in. And it's one of the things I think that CYCNET does is in many ways it reflects the characteristics of our field. People who go to child and youth care conferences for the first time often come away or talk about afterwards about how they went there ready to be intimidated by all these names, people they'd read, people they'd heard about, whatever, and how what they found was a place of inclusiveness. You know, that Jack Phelan, they'd go to talk to Jack Phelan, you know, with a very kind of shy question or something, you know, and the next thing you'd know, they'd be sitting down having a beer with Jack, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's a wonderfully inclusive field, and it's one of the things we've tried to do with CYCNET is keep it inclusive. And so what's happening now, as the board of directors has become more active and as we've developed different connections, we're starting to reach out to places where we haven't been before. You know, I mentioned the article that we're publishing from India. Mm-hmm. It's because there's a woman from India who's now on our board. And so with these changes, I think what's happening is CYCNET is setting itself up for the future. And I am just about to resign. I'll be finished in my role as editor come the end of December. Mm. And James Freeman, as you know, has been the co-editor with me for the last, couple of years as we build up to this transition time. And what's going on is we're shifting CYCNET to the next generation. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to go away or stop or stop nagging them or not tell them where they're wrong, because I see that as my responsibility.
Keep cleaning up our messes.
Yeah, I'll keep doing that. And so what I'm looking forward to now is, you know, what will the next generation do with CYCNET? Just like I was curious about what will the next generation do with relational child and youth care practice when I gave it up. And I gave it up, but, you know, passed it along or whatever you want to call it. So I'm really quite curious, because I know one of the things you said you might want to talk about is, you know, where do you see CYCNET heading? And my answer is I really don't know. Mm. All I know is, you know, it's going to be sort of the next generation's turn to decide what to do with it, mm-hmm. and what they turn it into. You know, hopefully, it will become somehow more interactive with what people know about social media that I don't know anything about, or what they know about IT that I don't know anything about. Hopefully new ideas will come up about how to do it differently, and perhaps in a more connecting way with some people who are in outlying areas where they don't have necessarily a nice internet computer at home, you know, and work mostly off of, I don't know, cell phones or whatever it happens to be. So mm-hmm.
you're talking about a shift, and I started the podcast talking about epochs, and you're talking about, you know, retiring from CYCNET and changing your roles and your relationships. And where do you see child and youth care going? I recently, in September of 2016, I had an interview with Lorraine Fox on this podcast, And she was quite somewhere between pessimistic and just tearful around sort of how we treat children and youth in our, and she was talking particularly in the U.S. and in North America, and had very little optimism for the future of children and youth. And I'm curious how you see the future of children and youth and child and youth care going forward.
And I have to honestly say, I don't have a clue. Mm. You know, I don't have a guess. I am, I'm not pessimistic, and I'm not cynical. I am critical, mm-hmm. right, often of what we do. But you know, I like what we're doing now compared to what we used to do. So that's where my optimism comes from. I think there's more respect for young people in the field than there was like 40 years ago. I think they've become more subjects rather than objects, as they were historically. We're more inclusive of them. You know, I mean, whether you look at childcare conferences or writings or whatever, that's just a symptom, I think, of us being more inclusive. And I think, you know, young people who get into trouble have been alienated. And they've been alienated not just by society in general, but they've been alienated by those of us who worked with them as we made them objects, you know, did it to them kind of thing. I think that just maintained their alienation. And I think, you know, that one of the arguments I hear a lot in general in the world about people who feel alienated is that if you connect with them as human beings, they tend to do better. You know, they fit into the world better. They get along better. They have less pain. They have less problems. So I think that we will continue to become more and more inclusive. And if we do that, then, you know, I'm hopeful. Because if you can leave care, whatever that looks like, feeling like you were cared for and included, then I think you go out into the world thinking you're part of the world, as opposed to separated from it, which is where many of our kids come from, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other side of that is around elders. You know, you started our first conversation around people we've forgotten, you know, Myers or
Rettle and people. Yeah. Speaking of forgetting. Now
absolutely.
Leave that part in the podcast because it's a perfect example.
Mark Kruger recently died, I know there was a lot of discussion about sort of lamenting, you know, how do we archive our elders, and any thoughts on how, you know, the role of elders in child and youth care and honoring elders, if that's even the appropriate term?
Yeah. I do have some, and they're colored by a very powerful experience I had with Henry Meyer when he was giving what turned out to be the last talk, that formal talk that he ever gave. And, you know, at that stage of his career, whenever he would give a talk, I would stand beside him on the podium being his eyes, because he was almost blind, you know. He would write out his talk beforehand almost word for word, and I would follow it in case he kind of drifted, you know, because he knew he was at that stage of his life where, you know, his mind was still working well, but he was prone to digressions. And, you know, if somebody raised their hand five rows away, he might not see them, you know. So it would be my job to help him out. So this was his last talk. And he'd written this 45-minute talk. And as he's in about 15 minutes of it, one of the organizers of this event gets my attention, calls me over and says, you have to tell him to stop. I say, why? They say, because we told him only to talk for 15 minutes. And he's, you know, obviously going to go on and on. So I go back over, call a little break, say, Henry, they told me you only have 15 minutes. He said, no, it's 45. I've got the email. They told me I could talk for 45 minutes. Anyways, there was this tug of war between this icon in our field and the organizers of a CYC event. Well, afterwards, I went with Henry back to his room and sat with him on his bed while he cried. You know, he was like in his 80s, and he just cried because he knew this was his last talk, and he felt so hurt and disrespected and rejected by this experience. And so I think that – I just tell you that story up front because it colors my thinking. I think that we have a tendency to forget people. You know, those of us who know Mark Krueger, knew Mark Krueger, keep him alive in our hearts. And by talking about him and his work, we keep him alive in our field. Just like if we would talk about Rettel and Meyer, we would keep them alive in our field. And it's like, I don't know, I like to think of child and youth care as kind of like a family. And we get these folks who get older, like me, you know, and we become old. And so sometimes young people look at older people and go like, they're irrelevant. And unfortunately, I see some of that in our field. Not necessarily amongst people who know these older folks, but amongst people who don't know them. So one time I'm doing a training and I'm telling a story. Okay, so it's just a story. And I'm talking about how I drove into my mother's yard or suburb one day. And there were these kids playing hockey on the street. And so I give a gentle tap on the horn to say, hey, kids, you know, I'm here and I want to come through. And this young kid, I don't know, he must have been about 11, just turns around, glares at me, and flicks me the finger, you know? And so I say to this group where I'm doing the training, I said, I have to confess to you that at that point, I just wanted to pick that little bugger up, put him under my arm, take him back to his mother, and say, you should spank your child. Because what I was trying to talk about is how we all have this stuff, right, that comes up, and our job is to deal with it. This one guy looks at me and he says, I can't believe I'm sitting in the room with a fat old guy who thinks it's okay to abuse children. I go, yeah, well, that's what happens when you're a fat old guy. You know? However, I do want to say that, you know, as I have no idea how I got to be an elder, but I ended up with that adjective sometimes. Mm-hmm. I feel tremendously respected in the field. And I think one of the things that's happening is that as more and more people go to colleges, you know, and get their degrees or diplomas or certificates, and as the college instructors are teaching more and more what I would consider to be real child and youth care practice or real child and youth care, the young people who are in their 20s and early 20s, they know who Lorraine Fox is, and they know who Jerry Fuster is, and they know who Karen Vandervan is, you know? And so in some ways, I think the colleges and the instructors in the college are doing a really good job of helping young people know that they have elders and teaching them to respect them. I think it's very nice what I see. So,
well, as someone who teaches in a college, I certainly appreciate that perspective.
Oh, I think it's one of the greatest gifts that the college has given the field. You know, they are helping the young people know that there is a history here. And like I said earlier, the more you know your history, the more you know yourself.
Absolutely.
And so I go sometimes to conferences or whatever, and because I have a bit of a name in the field, and, you know, I'll run into students, you know, And they are like so, at first, so delighted and intimidated, you know, because, oh, God, you're the guy who wrote all those books that we read or all those papers that we read, you know. But what it tells me is there they are. They're like 20. And they recognize that you made a contribution. Hmm. And I think that's the best thing we can do for elders, is just recognize that they've made a contribution.
Tom, I don't think of a better way to end this conversation than by saying I so appreciate the incredible contribution you've made to child and youth care through your writing, through your commitments, through your work over the past, you know, 4 or 5 decades working with children and youth and families and endless practitioners and I really appreciate you taking the time today and for all you've done for child and youth care over your time. And it will be fascinating to see how CYC evolves, and I'm glad you're not disappearing with your transitions.
Oh, no. And thank you. That's very kind. Mm-hmm. That's very kind of you.
Thank you for joining me today, and I look forward to the next time that you and I are together.
Me too. And I just want to tell you, I've really appreciated the kind of casual opportunity to share some of what I think. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. Bye-bye for now, Tom.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.